Today's guest is Cindy Schrauben, and I'm excited to bring Cindy to you because if you're a grandma, she just published her first children's book. I'm so excited for her, and I am going to be ordering, so if I haven't already, by the time this airs. But she lives in Michigan, and she is 63, and she's been working. She decided she wanted to write a children's book 8 years ago. So it's been quite a journey for her, and she shares it. She didn't have the idea for this book 8 years ago, but it's a journey, right? Find what you love and then work on it and never give up. And she is a perfect example of that. So she, her book, This Could Be You, has a great theme. So we talk about that and how important it is for kids to have this at a young age. We both wish we had it at a younger age, but this book will really help them with that. And I'm not going to tell you what it is. You just have to tune in and stay on and listen. But yeah, she has a couple of grandsons. So those are her inspirations. Isn't it great to have grandchildren to help inspire your next book idea? So that's what she does. And she's an ex-teacher. And, you know, I think she's had this percolating for a lot of her life. And so it's so amazing to see how fully lit up she is about what she's doing and that there's lots more coming from what she's doing. And so it's really a great story, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoyed meeting and listening to it myself. All right, enjoy.
Hi, I'm Laurie Wright, also known as Not Your Average Grandma. I created this podcast as a place to go for midlife inspiration. If you are in a stage where you believe the best is behind you, it is my hope that one of these episodes will ignite a long suppressed or unrealized desire, and you will see the potential within yourself just waiting to be tapped so you can do amazing things with the time you have left. I want you to stop seeing your age as a limitation and start seeing it as your superpower. You have years of experience and value that a younger you never had. So it's time to lean into that and use it to fuel your future. No more letting age hold you back from the pursuit of a more passion-filled life. The more passionate we are, the better the world will be. So stop settling for average, put your AirPods in, and let this episode inspire you to take the first step in transforming your mind, body, and soul.
Welcome to another episode of Not Your Average Lives. And today I have with me Cindy Schrauben. And she had a really great way of telling me how to say her name. It's like shushing the robin, which I guess since she is a children's author, that is a really good explanation for children. They can really then say exactly what it is and pronounce it correctly. So welcome to the show, Cindy.
Thanks so much. I'm really excited to be here.
Yes, I am so excited you are here because I think your story will inspire a lot of people to do something they might not have done at a younger age. So Cindy is a recently published author. Well, your book is publishing on the 1st of April?
Correct.
Yeah. Yep. Soon to be published author.
Really yes. Soon. Really
yes.
Soon.
Yes. So by the time this comes out, I think it'll be out. So yeah. And she did not do this in her past life. I don't even know what her past life was because we haven't talked before. So it's all going to unfold for me just like it does for you as you're listening. But one of the things she told me is, first of all, the book title is called This Could Be You. And when I asked her what it was about, I love the topic because unfortunately, I don't think we do enough of this with children. And I wish I had some of it when I was a child. A lot of it I didn't get till I was in my 50s. But it's about growth mindset and reinforcing that, you know, you should go after your dreams and dreams are possible. So we'll talk probably a little bit more about the book. And she lives in Michigan, and she and I are the exact same age. So she is just like 2 months older than me. So she's 63 as well. But I think that's important for this conversation because this is brand new. This stuff, she's just first time published author. And I think she followed her heart and did something that was leading her to do something she loved. And I know she is a grandmother, so maybe being a grandmother had something to do with it. So without any more elaboration, Cindy, why don't you share like who you are, how you became a children's author and what that journey was like.
Hi. Okay. I will do that. One of the reasons that I was excited to be here is to share this and to share with people, especially people that are closer to our age, that, you know, it's not too late or it's not too hard. And I grew up in Michigan. I've always been here, although this time of year, I wonder why sometimes it's still chilly here, but I have had a variety of different jobs. And that's part of my story, really, is that I've kind of grasped for things and never really stuck with something a real long time until just recently. And that's something that I want to talk about too, and why, you know, I was able to stick with this journey of writing for kids, because it wasn't an easy one, but I was able to make it happen. So I do have two grandsons. They're 4 and 7, and they definitely inspire me every day. I was a teacher, so that makes a difference too. Loving books, and I have two daughters that have always loved books. So writing for kids is always something that was in the back of my mind. But we talk about dreams, but we don't always follow through with those dreams, right? Sometimes they're just something we say, oh, I would love to do that, but we don't always follow through.
And what kind of teacher were you?
Elementary and preschool. So I'm kind of writing for those kids now, but yeah.
That's great. So what do you think made you jump around? Didn't find your thing, maybe? Or is that what you're thinking now?
That's what I've tried to ask myself now. I think part of it is that searching for, you know, that new shiny thing. And I would say, oh, that sounds really exciting. I'll try that for a while. And I'm not sure, but I think that a lot of that has to do with wanting to succeed. And when things get tough, sometimes bailing on that. I think that was something that I tended to do. You know, you see this exciting new thing and take a risk. And I was always okay about taking the risks, but I didn't always stick with things. I kind of, maybe this would be more fun, and turn to someone else. My resume is kind of a mess because of that. But if you look back, you'll realize most of the things I've done had to do with kids. So I think it was, you're right, honing in on that exact thing that I wanted and needed to do, and how I wanted to reach the kids was a little bit different. But it's it's also age, I think, and realizing that it was time to do things for me and do things my way, and not worrying about pleasing other people. I used to be a real people pleaser, and that sounds terrible, because it sounds like now I'm this horrible person. I don't care what other people think. And that's not it either, but it's also knowing what I want and what will work for me.
Yeah. The problem with people pleasing, in my opinion, is that a people pleaser does it at the expense of their own pleasure, and you can do both. And yes. So sounds like you learned how to please yourself along with still pleasing others, because obviously you're pleasing others with this amazing book that you've written. And people think it has to be a direct thing, and it can be an indirect thing, where an indirect can serve a lot of people and fill a lot of people's cups. And think of all the pain. And, you know, I just get this vision, because I have grandkids and I read to them. And I just have this vision of someone like you reading your book to their grandchild. And so it's not just for the children, it's for the moms, the dads, the grandparents. So that's really wonderful. So I have a question. Did you retire from teaching, or did you move on to something else and then retire? So at what point did you stop doing what you were doing to do this?
Well, I was teaching in a former town that we lived in. My husband had to move, or we had to move for my husband's job. And when we moved, there wasn't a lot of opportunity at that point in time. They weren't needing a whole lot of teachers. And so I did a few other things. I worked for a children's museum, getting that up and started. That was really fun. And I did some writing and edited a magazine, a health magazine for a bit. So like I said, I've just done a bunch of different things. And about 8 years ago, I decided I was going to do this. And the people that know me probably thought, yeah, right. You know, she's going to, you know, she's got a new, she has a new dream. But I, for some reason, it stuck.
And okay. I want to stop here and just remind my listeners who are listening. You said you always gave up and you had this idea 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. So you never gave up on it.
You didn't.
Kept going. And yeah.
A big part of that, I think, is the community. The children's writing community is so strong and so supportive. You know, we're all kind of competing for the same shelf space, but I have never come across another children's author who made me feel that way. They're so helpful. And it's that accountability too, I think. So I think finding that group of people was really huge in the fact that I did stick with this. And the stories that everyone shares that, you know, 8-10 years isn't uncommon for a writer to learn their way and find their agent and get their book published, that, you know, it was okay that it was taking me a while and we all supported each other. So I think that was a huge, huge part of it.
Yeah. And it's funny because what comes to mind is a children's book. They're short. They're easy. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Tell me about the journey itself. You had the idea and then what were your next steps? You know, one of the things, and I actually wrote about this in my monthly newsletter that's going out tomorrow, but it's like, we see this destination and this mm-hmm. big, huge goal. And sometimes that stops people because they think, oh my yeah. God, that's so far away. And I just can't yeah. imagine how I'm going to get there. And so it's like the focus on the next step. The next step, not the whole like multi-step journey.
Exactly. And that's actually a part of the book that I wrote for kids, is that one step, every new step, every bit of effort is to be celebrated, right? Mm-hmm. Every step that you take. It's funny though, when you brought that up, that fact that it takes so long. I remember how naive I was about the whole process when I first started. I had that idea where, yep, they're short. Children's books are short. I was a teacher. I was a parent. I've read a million picture books. This will be easy, right? And I remember writing in one of the online groups, my goal is to have an agent by, you know, it was, I don't know, 6 months from then or something, and then have a book published by. And I know that people were trying really hard not to laugh at me, the people that were already in the industry, because I look back now and know how silly it was, because it doesn't happen that quickly. It takes
and maybe
a lot
you
of
would
work.
Have stopped if you thought it was going to take yeah, 8 years, right?
For sure. Yeah. But also hearing other people's journeys, they share their journeys mm-hmm. all the time in that community where, you know, this is how long it took me and this is how I did this and this is how, and that, seriously, I think that community is probably 80% of why I stuck with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's another thing I put in there is, you know, focus on the journey and not the destination. And yes. I like to, instead, because journey sometimes sounds tough, you know, you right. think of like heavy backpack and going up a hill. And, mm-hmm. but when you say adventure, which is more like, you know, yes. and I love roller coasters, and being an entrepreneur certainly is like a roller coaster, right? So yeah, mm. I, what you did is with this community, that was a whole part of that experience. Yeah. So yeah. And you learned so many things. Like all that time that you spent pivoting, I guess you can call it, you know, mm-hmm. thinking I'm going to do this. And then you're like, I'm going to do this and searching, you know, that built the wisdom that's going to now help you write better books.
Absolutely. If you look back at your own journey, probably as I have, you'll see that each of those things that I did and each of those steps helped me to get where I am now. So, and having, like you said, that wisdom and enjoying and looking back now and thinking, you know, I might not have been achieving like I wanted to back then, but boy, I learned a lot from each of those experiences, and it really did help.
Mm. Yeah.
And I think we need to do that more often, look at our adventures as opposed to, like you said, as opposed to a journey, and to realize that there's a reason.
So right? When did you have the idea of the book you have now? Because I imagine, did you go through different ideas before did you try on different things? Did you have drafts of different things? I can imagine.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. I mean, each book probably has 20 to 30 different drafts. And I have, a good 30 stories that I think are ready stories, and so many other partial stories out there, because, like I said, I still kind of dive for the new shiny thing. So if I'm working on something and a new great idea comes up, I do tend to pivot. But I think that's good too, because then when you let it sit and you go back to something, you realize you have new eyes, right? You look at it with new eyes.
Yeah.
So, and the industry changes, and that's a big part, is listening to other people about what you should be doing and what should be writing. And I think that's another lesson that I learned, was that I listened too much to people saying, editors don't want books with a message. For a while there, they were saying, don't write any books with a message, which my book definitely has a message, because kids just want fun. Kids just want quirky. And so for a while, that's what was selling. So I switched and started writing what I was told was selling. And finally, and I'm not sure what triggered it. I'm not sure, other than some big life family things that, you know, make you reevaluate your life, go back and say, I'm going to write what I want to write and see what happens. And that's what I did with this book. I went back to my roots from 8 years ago and what I was writing when I first started. So that I think is another message too, is to find your Do it for you. I was writing it for me, and I learned a lot from it. The growth mindset attitude that I wrote for kids is so relevant to everyone. Right?
Yeah, it's probably something you wished you had when you were a kid, like me. And like, if so I was much. A kid, this is what I needed my brain to know. Yeah. And it's interesting, because I think the pandemic, you're talking about like what books, you know, that you go through phases on what is more the thing. And I think the pandemic changed a lot of attitudes I somebody that I follow, he said, we've had a resignation revolution in a way, because people are like searching for that thing. And I think a lot of people are getting into spirituality and growth mindset and, you know, and I know I meet a lot of people my age, over 50, who are, you know, searching for that thing, because they realize now that more than ever, they want to live with passion in their lives. So that's great that you're starting with these kids at a young age. So when did this idea first come up for you? And did you, when I think of like writing a book, I think you have to have an idea first before you have an editor. Is that kind of the process that?
Yeah, well, you have, it depends on the publisher. Some editors will take submissions directly from an author. Most of the big publishers will only accept from an agent. So you have to have an agent first. And that was part of the whole process too, was figuring out how to listen to all of the advice of what you should be doing in order to get an agent. And then, or sending to directly to publishers. But then if you've sent a book to a bunch of publishers who have said no, or in reality not answered at all, then you get an agent. They're not very happy with the fact that a bunch of publishers have already seen it. So now what am I going to do if you've already sent that book out there? So it's a tangled web. But,
yeah. Well, and I think your agent is the one who reached out to me, right? And applied.
My publisher.
Your publisher did. Mm-hmm. Ah,
that was my publisher. Yeah.
So I guess the marketing arm of the publisher is like, how do we get the word out? And it's interesting. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So tell me about when did you have the specific idea for this book?
This book was one of the last books I started writing and one of the quickest books that I wrote, which, and they do say sometimes that if it was easier to write, it's a better product. I've heard that. I don't know how true it is, but so it was probably about 2 years ago that I started writing this specific book. And of course it morphed and changed a little bit as I went along. And you know, critique partners are a huge part of the writing process. And, you know, that's a part I look back at where in my younger years, I probably wouldn't have done very well with listening to this criticism or the critiques, because I would have just, you know, they don't know what they're talking about. This is my story. And learning to take that criticism or that guidance was a huge step in my life in general, I think. But I digress. About two years ago, and started to tweak it and help from critique partners before I sent it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like it came more from an intuitive place when it came so easy. Too. Yeah.
I think so too. It's and you know, sometimes you just don't really know. They ask, where did you get the idea for this book? And 9 times out of 10, I can't really tell you. Sometimes some of the other books that I write, I might hear a funny phrase, because I write a lot of funny, quirky stuff for kids too. So sometimes it's just a funny title, but this book had a lot to do. It was very intentional. This is the most intentional book I've ever written, because I wanted to encourage kids with a growth mindset. So it was very.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes they come up in dreams too. Or like when you first wake up in the morning, it's like, I've had a couple of those where I'm like, wake up in the morning, I'm like, oh my gosh. So that's awesome. So one of the things that you said was in your book, which I love, is that, you know, you talk about the different occupations in terms of dreaming and, you know, achieving your dream. And so you said before we hit record that you made a point out of talking about not just the traditional jobs, which I'd like you to touch on, because I think it's so important, because we live in such a different world than we did when you and I were growing up. Mm-hmm. And we only had those, you know, kind of brick and mortar kind of options. Yeah. And I mean, probably the closest thing to freedom was a sales job, you know, where you could go out on the street and drive your car to client appointments. So describe, you know, what that is, what's a non-traditional job to you, and how that kind of works in your book.
You're right. I intentionally talked about all kinds of occupations, right? Because I wanted to make sure, like you said, we used to hear you could be a doctor, you could be a nurse, you could be a teacher. And there were very few things that I even knew existed to do, right? And I want kids to know that, you know, not every child is going to, or every young person is going to be cut out for college. And it's just the reality. And we need all of those occupations, right? We need people who are going to be doing the non-traditional jobs. In order to survive, we have to have a little bit of everything out there. And I don't want the kids to feel like they aren't succeeding or they aren't valuable because they're not doing one of those traditional jobs. So I just wanted to I talk about a truck driver in the book, and I talk about a farmer and an artist. And there are just so many different ways that kids can succeed and that they can share their own passion. Right. Yes. And maybe if I had known about being an author younger, when I was younger, I probably, not that I didn't know they existed, but that it wasn't something that, you know, was put out as an option or that I saw as an option, maybe I would have done this a lot earlier. And I think, you know, exploring yourself and exploring those dreams and what you enjoy doing. And that's what I hope the book will do for kids, is to see, oh, I like to do that. So maybe I would be a good artist. Or, you know, I don't talk specifically about entrepreneurs, but that's a, you know, a huge, how many people now are entrepreneurs of one yeah. sort or another, and how important it is for kids to see that and to understand. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because entrepreneur is first of all, it's a hard word to pronounce
yeah, and right.
read for a little kid.
It didn't rhyme. My book
yeah.
rhymes.
yeah. And secondly, I love rhyming books, by the way. And secondly, it's such a large bucket. I mean,
yes.
entrepreneurs can do so many different things. And yeah. so you need almost need a book on its own of entrepreneurship, different kinds of entrepreneurial Ooh. Jobs. So,
Ooh. And that you know, might have to be on my list.
yeah. Yeah. And yeah, that would be a great one. And then I can give you a long list of different kinds of jobs. It's crazy what some people do. Yes. And, you know, I think that the things that you're describing as non-traditional are many in many cases, like an artist can be one that works for somebody or can be somebody that works for themselves. So,
absolutely. You
know, so that it's kind of like bundled in there. I think that the point is no matter who, whether you work for somebody or you work for yourself, that the passion is there, that you have to be doing what you're passionate about, because it really doesn't matter. I think entrepreneurs have this kind of desire to make something that's yeah. different, and that's why they go into that path. But the passion would you know, it would be in both places. It's just how are you going to fill up your cup with what you do every day, the activity that you have every day.
That's a huge point, I think, that I am proof of. And I don't know why it took me so long to figure it out. I've always been a creator of sorts. I always liked making things and reimagining things, but I love writing so much that if I have a weekend where I have to go away and I can't sit down and do any writing, it drives me crazy. It is that passion that you were talking about. And it's finding that is the trick, right? And I'm not quite sure how to do that at a younger age, but I'm just so glad that I did finally stumble on this, because I love it.
Yeah. I love the rhyming stuff. I think there's something in me that, like, you know, it's just really kind of creative when trying to find the right word that rhymes.
Yeah.
And I really respect people who can do that off the top of their head. It's like crazy, like rappers, and they just like make it yeah. up as they go.
Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy. It's like a puzzle. I think it's part yeah. of that. It's part of that click.
Yeah. Yeah. I have fun doing like acronyms, like for, you know, my people who work with me with businesses. It's like, you know, cause my Spark School, it's like an acronym. It means something. So I have fun with that kind of stuff and coming up with the right word. Yeah. Cause once you know, it's like, you know, you can try yeah. different ones on, and then it's like, nah, it's not there yet. So yeah, let's see. So in your submission, one of the things you said is that you had possibly a fear of failure that kept you from maybe pursuing the things in the past. So how did you overcome that? Did something change when you got to the point of, was it that your passion was so great, it didn't matter anymore? The fear of not doing it was greater than the fear of doing it?
I think I've tried to figure this all out. And one of the things that I think has a lot to do with is the fact that I don't care if I fail in front of someone anymore. And I used to care too much about what other people thought, I think. And so now,
the people pleaser, it's the people pleaser.
Yeah, there you go. And now if it doesn't work, you know, it doesn't work. But I will tell you, when I first started writing, I didn't tell anyone. I mean, my husband knew I was holding up on the computer and working on something, but I didn't share my stories with anyone but my critique partners, who I didn't really know in person. They were the only people that saw anything I wrote for a few years, because I think that was that fear of failure, or that fear of looking silly, or, you know, just another silly dream that she's trying to fulfill. I really think it was getting to the point where, you know what, that's okay. Whatever they think, you know, they have yeah. the right to think that, but I don't care. I'll probably fail. I'll fail a lot. A big part of the process for authors, at least for a lot of kidlit authors, is putting your work out there. And there are a lot of little contests that different authors have that you can enter. And that was terrifying at first because it's out there for anybody to see, right? But it's part of that process of you can see yourself getting better and you can see those small steps, like you were saying earlier, and how important it is to celebrate each little step. Oh, I got a little bit better this time. And I got into the finals this time, or, you know, helping to see your progress.
Mm. Yeah. So it sounds like something shifted where you didn't see it or perceive it anymore as fear of failure. You perceived it as, you know, learning yeah. along the way,
yeah.
you know, it's not failure. It's failure if I don't do anything, but
that's
learning
a lot,
that would be a
part,
good book.
That's a huge part of the growth mindset, right?
Yeah.
Is that failure is the first step in learning, right? Mm,
yeah.
There's an acronym to go with that too. And I can't, it's not coming to my head right now, but
yeah.
it's, and giving back to those authors who like had those contests and gave free critiques and gave their advice week after week after week in their blogs or in their podcasts and helped me along the way, giving back now to those people or to the people coming that are still coming up to where I am now is a huge part of why I want to do things like this, like talk with you, is to show people that, you know, if you keep pushing and you keep working on it, you'll get there.
Yeah. Yeah. So my mission is to help women over 50 become more sparked in their second half.
Yes.
You clearly are sparked, and that's so exciting. I mean, people who are sparked, you want to be around, you know, the energy is there. Mm-hmm. The attraction is there. And then when you're sparked, you attract more of what you want. You're just in the right mindset space, the right frequency.
I love that.
Yeah. So I want to ask you, at what point did you start to feel sparked? Because to me, if you have a video camera and you're looking at somebody who's sparked, you see somebody who doesn't hit snooze. You see somebody who jumps out of bed, is super excited to get to their to-do list, is really excited about planning the next thing that, you know, working on the next goal. You know, I say the goal could be far away, but what's the little next mini goal? What's that next milestone you're working towards? And it also changes the relationships that you have with people, because
sure.
when you're not living your best life, if you're not living in a sparked way and you're like, basically the flame is out, you know, it's like the wick is gone. It affects the people around you because
sure.
you don't have that energy. It's more of a negative vibe you're sending off or a neutral vibe. And so tell me, at what point did you notice that kind of like spark? And then, you know, obviously there doesn't mean that you can still have like an obstacle and a struggle, but still mm-hmm. be sparked. And so I'd like to know kind of when you noticed that change and what has this done for your husband? How has life changed
yeah.
around you because of you doing what you love?
This is going to be two parts, because I have a question for you too on the whole sparked thing, because I've listened to a lot of your programs and I love hearing people that have just all of a sudden the switch goes on, right? And that sparked moment. And I think when the sparked moment for believing that this could really happen for me, I think that was it. When after I had been writing for a bit and I had been getting feedback and been improving with the help of other people, I finally believed in myself. And I finally believed that that could happen. And I think that was the time for me where I started letting my family read things that I had written. And it wasn't that long ago, honestly. It was only maybe 3 years ago. So I probably went through 5 years of plugging along and doing it because I was enjoying it and I thought I was getting better, but I didn't really believe it yet.
Mm.
I wasn't really Yeah, sure, what could happen.
And what was, do you remember a point at which the belief set in?
I don't remember like a day or a moment or something that happened, but I think it was like some of those contests and some of those critique partners who believed in me and some of those, some of that affirmation. And that is bad because it wasn't an internal thing. It was some external affirmation that helped me get there. But then I finally believed it really could happen and I would keep pushing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Here's my question. Sure. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I want to speak to the affirmation thing because that is why your community is so key to your survival and your success.
Mm-hmm.
But you can self-affirm. And so, but it worked for you. And so, I think that is really amazing. And that's what I help my students do because a lot of them, when they come to me, they don't have a community yet. They don't even know what they want to do. And so doing self-affirming and knowing how to do them right is really important. So that's so interesting. I love that. And I love the fact that, and because of what I try to tell people do is follow the curiosity. Follow the interest and something will spark along the way. It has to be a research. It has to be viewed as kind of like a research project at first, where you're just looking every day for signs you have to get your mind into this space where you're open and the universe will start sending things. I fully believe it because I've seen it over and over happen. So,
Well, and I think that internal affirmation is there now. I think I just needed that. And I wish I hadn't needed that external affirmation, but I think I had to get to a point where I truly believed in myself. And now, now I still get help from critique partners, but not as much as I used to because I trust in my own abilities now more than I did before. And I think it was building that up, getting to that point where I trusted my own abilities.
Yeah. Now you're in the position where you can help newbies.
Exactly. You know? And that's really what I want to do because I would not have made it without that.
Yeah. That's amazing. So your question is?
The whole sparked thing. Now, jumping up in the morning, having something exciting to work on, I always kind of had that. And I always wanted to try something different and something new. It was the stick-to-it part that was tough for me. What can you say to people about that and about sticking with things that you might have a spark for? Because there were other things too that I really believed in and thought I wanted to do, but I didn't stick with it.
Yeah. Well, what I truly believe is that the stick-to-itiveness has to come from a deeper purpose. Okay. So you probably had surface level reasons for doing things. And they can't be sustained over time. So like jobs change. So if you really like a job, what if you get laid off? So it's the deeper work within you that has some deeper meaning, like that's going to impact the world in some way that's going to serve. That's what fulfills us. And I used to think that it was like, because I'm an extrovert. So I like being with people and directly impacting people. And I used to think that's what people needed to do, but people come in all sorts of ways of personality, as I've learned. And some people don't want to impact in that way. They want to impact indirectly. So think of somebody who finds a cure for a virus.
Yeah.
So they're working in a lab. And of course, they might have teammates. They're not really impacting teammates. They're co-working with teammates. But what they're doing can impact millions with the work they do. And so it has to. I do this exercise where I say, why are you doing that? And they answer why. And I was like, and then I repeat what they said with a question. So, an example is, I would say, I want to be a coach because I want to help people. I want to help people with, knowledge I have. Well, why do you want to help people with knowledge you have? And then I'll answer probably with another, maybe a little deeper, but still surface level. You do it a few times and it literally will get to the root of what it means to you. So that is a very good exercise.
That's perfect. You just answered. You did. You totally answered it for me. There is a deep seated desire in me to speak to kids and to see kids enjoy reading and to see kids strive and believe in themselves. So you just answered it for me perfectly.
Yeah. And it's more than doing it for you. You know, it's doing it for, it's more of like the imprint I want to leave. And I truly believe with all the work that I've done that you have found the reason you came here. And many of us, it's a long and winding path, but we weren't supposed to find it sooner. I had a vision of, and I'm not even sure if I've shared this on the podcast. I just got chills from thinking about it, but I was taken through a vision in a retreat. And it was what came to me is it was a meeting with my future self. And I met this really wrinkled, like, think of Mother Teresa, but 10 times more wrinkled than her, you know, hunched over, really old, but vital, you know, not sickly, vital, but just ancient, clearly more than 100 years old. And I came upon her and I told her, I apologized to her for not having found what I love sooner and doing what I do that I know comes from a very deep place. And what she responded to me changed everything. She told me, Lori, you weren't meant to find it sooner. You couldn't do what you do now if you found it sooner. I mean, it's like tears in my eyes, but I couldn't be 40 years old and help people who are over 50, you know, it's just impossible. I couldn't, all those struggles that I share, that I learned from, I wouldn't have that wisdom to help people with, or to give them examples of.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, so. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
But you're right. And I think that's the case with me too. I think you're right.
Wow. So I didn't hear about your husband. How's your husband handling all this?
Yes. Yes. He handles it really, really well. He's actually been, he just retired, so he has more time. I was always the one who, you know, I did the cleaning and I did the cooking and I did the everything my whole life. I just did. And he has just stepped up and he is taking care of everything. And he's been so supportive. It's been very sweet to see him sending a text to somebody about my book. And I'm like, oh gosh, that was very sweet. But it's changed things. I feel, not that I didn't feel respected before, but it's a new kind of respect that I feel too, that's really a good thing, been a good thing for our relationship too.
Yeah. It means the world to me when my students find a spark and it ripples, like their kids notice, or it improves their relationship at home and stuff. And even when the husband starts to ask questions and wants to do similar stuff, because you're now an example, you're a role model to so many people. You're showing my audience what's possible, and your husband now sees what's possible for him through you.
True. Yeah. Very true.
That's so amazing. So
yeah. All right. It's very cool.
That's a good place to end. I am so excited about your book. I'm going to order it and send one. I'm going to order two and send one each to my kids. I have two daughters and they both have kids. So yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate it. This has been great.
Yeah, it's been great. So yeah, keep me posted. Let me know. Send me a note when it publishes so I can go in order.
All right.
So,
we'll do. I'll send just some signed book plates.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Not Your Average Lives podcast. If you haven't yet, make sure to subscribe on iTunes if you have an Apple device. You can find free resources and learn what else I have going on at the moment that might interest you on my website at notyouraveragegrandma.com. You can also find me on Instagram or Facebook at notyouraveragegrandma. If you liked this episode, it would make my heart so happy if you could leave me a 5-star rating. You can also add a review to let me know what you like about this podcast, which will help spread the word about it to others who need a little midlife inspiration. As always, be you, listen to your inner voice, and focus on reigniting that lost spark so you can start living your own, not your average, life.